This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:16, Tuesday, 15th of February, and of course you're listening to The Morning Run. But in the meantime, we turn our attention to the efforts to extinguish the smoking habit. Now, just to remind everybody, New Zealand, they recently banned the sale of tobacco to anyone born after 2008, which means anyone currently 14 years or younger. Malaysia looks set to be heading in the same direction when Health Minister Kari Jamaluddin said he will table a new Tobacco and Smoking Control Act in the upcoming Parliament meeting to replace the current tobacco product control legislation under the Food Act of 1983.
The intention is to prohibit the sale of cigarettes and tobacco products, including vape and e-cigarettes, to people born after 2005. But many are divided over this decision, with some supporting the move to stamp out a new generation of smokers, but others are skeptical over its enforcement. There are also concerns that banning smoking will not eliminate the habit, but shift young smokers towards the black market. So is banning effective? What other measures would the government be considering in regards to tobacco products?
So for more on this, we have on the line with us consultant respiratory physician, Dr. Helmi Hajamaidin. He was also recently appointed as technical advisor to the Ministry of Health on the tobacco and smoking legislation. Good morning and congratulations, Dr. Helmi. Now, let's start with your newly appointed role as this technical advisor to the Ministry of Health. What does the role entail?
The role, I think, will primarily entail a lot of stress. But joking aside, I think it's to help coordinate the issue of tobacco control, because it's not a very straightforward issue. The way I see tobacco control is part of a very complex system. There are many components, many factors that interact with each other. And these are obvious ones, you know, like issues like physiological addiction and health outcomes, but also less obvious ones like issues of taxation and poverty. So when you're dealing with something this complex, then you sometimes need to be able to take a step back and look at the problem at hand in a more holistic fashion and be a bit strategic when dealing with the problem. So I hope that my presence, my role, will be a positive contribution to this.
So we know that the government is looking to reform legislation with regards to smoking. What are some of the plans that's going on?
So the Ministry of Health is one of many stakeholders who have been working hard for many years to improve provisions and legislations in regards to smoking. But current bills need to be improved upon when it comes to tobacco control, because we have the Poison Act of 1952, which is the basis of most of our tobacco-related laws. And you can imagine how archaic it is. You know, it's going back more than half a century ago. And in this day and age, there are so many more things that are out there, things like electronic cigarettes, for example. And a new bill that is more comprehensive, that has got more comprehensive control measures, are necessary. And this, the chat about the generational endgame is actually one part of a bill that is in its final stages of completion, which I believe YB Kari Jamaluddin will be looking to present to Parliament in the near future.
And speaking of stakeholders, who will be the stakeholders the Ministry and you will be engaging in regards to this issue of a smoking ban?
I would say the single most important stakeholder is the rakyat, because the goals of all these measures are really to improve our overall health and reduce the burdens of diseases on our society. And, you know, even with the initial messaging when it comes to the generational endgame, we've had very reassuring feedback, that, you know, very positive response, even among smokers themselves. But then there are also other stakeholders who include professional bodies, NGOs, such as members of the Malaysia Health Coalition and the Malaysian Council for Tobacco Control. And these are NGOs and NGIs who've been championing the cause for many years. On top of that, you've got more, I suppose you could say, government-related stakeholders, so agencies, ministries. And of course, there are also people out there like those representing industry and retail outlets that would want to have their voice heard as well.
Now, Dr. Helmi, from a business perspective, we do have cigarette companies operating in Malaysia, employing hundreds of people, and of course paying tax to the government. So what would this general ban do to them, though?
Well, I can assure you that they frequently contact the government and are constantly sharing their opinions and views. And I think it's important to set aside the fear-mongering and remind ourselves that there is no plan to ban smoking tomorrow or next week. The idea is to ban smoking and related products for individuals born after 2005. You know, people who are currently about about 17 years and below at this point in time. So the industry is not going to lose their approximately 5 million customers overnight. There are many aspects to reducing the burden of smoking in our society, you know, and the one key element is to prevent individuals from becoming addicts in the first place. There is, unfortunately, more than sufficient evidence in the literature and from industry memos that have been made publicly available to show that our youth are targets. And this is unsurprising because, you know, you only need less than a packet of cigarettes to become addicts and customers. If you look at things like taxation, for example, we are looking at tax from cigarettes that are less than 3 billion in 2020. And if we look at studies looking at the cost to our healthcare, looking at just three things, lung cancer, heart disease, and COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, that those three diseases alone cost the government approximately 3 billion ringgit 10 years ago. And you can imagine how much more it will cost today given the increased number of patients, the increased cost of healthcare, and inflation.
There are also those who question the effectiveness of banning tobacco and vape products, as it might push people towards the black market, which is harder to enforce and regulate. So what are your thoughts about this?
It's not a new argument. Whenever there's any, and I mean any attempt at improving public health via tobacco control mechanisms, one of the first things that's raised by industry is that it will push people towards the black market. I can tell you, every year, just before the budget is announced, there'll be a slew of media articles and interviews telling everyone that, you know, raising taxes on tobacco is bad for us because it'll empower the black market. And this happens with the regularity of a finely tuned Swiss watch. But we need to look at the actual evidence, right? So let's look at the actual evidence of the black market thriving because of tobacco control policies. And we say take tax for one example, right? Because that's a very regular argument. You know, we haven't raised taxes on cigarettes for many years. And on the other hand, there's that constant argument that illicit cigarettes are proliferating and then we are allegedly one of the worst countries in the world when it comes to the black market, if not the worst. Now, how is that so when we haven't raised taxes? You know, logically, it's either the situation is not as bad as it's pictured or made out to be, or there are other factors in play and we should continue to actually raise taxes because it doesn't make a difference to the size of the black market. Now, this is not to say that I'm dismissing the importance of addressing the issue of the black market, because we do acknowledge the fact that it has to be better enforcement. And while I do believe that, you know, there's a fair amount of hyperbole when it comes to the issues with regards to tobacco control, we need to work harder on the issue of governance when it comes to dealing with the black market. You know, the two separate issues. We wouldn't have the same argument if we're talking about guns or cocaine. You know, we're not going to allow these things to be sold at Family Mart or Maiden on the basis that if we restrict their sales, the black market will thrive. So it's really separating the two issues and ensuring that when it comes to governance and enforcement, we are not losing out.
Okay, but what about the banning of vape or e-cigarette products? Even New Zealand is not banning them. So wouldn't it be better or safe for the government to regulate them here instead?
I think there is still a lot of discussion with regards to the degree to which we want to look at vaping products. You know, we don't necessarily have to look at New Zealand only. Even if we look around Southeast Asia, Singapore, Thailand, even Cambodia have all banned e-cigarettes for quite some time now. And, you know, tobacco control is multifaceted. There are many different approaches that we can use, many different policies. And just because New Zealand does not do something, it does not mean that we shouldn't do or we should do. You know, we should. You know, that's that Malay saying, Ambilyang Jenik Buang Yang Kero. So we take good aspects of policies that are being developed across the globe and see how they can be applicable to us as a nation.
Dr. Helmi, meanwhile, the previous health minister, Dato' Sri Dr. Zulkifli, he implemented no smoking rules at eateries, be it coffee shops, cafes, restaurants, in a bid to safeguard public health. But are those rules still in effect today?
And so the rules are still in effect, and not just your observations, but there's been some media attention recently about people who do not seem to be adhering to these rules as diligently as they did during the pre-pandemic days. Kyrie himself had recently said that he has ordered the ministry's enforcement officers to increase checks at eateries. So I think, yes, it boils down to the fact that not just tobacco control, but I think any policy when it comes to its introduction to society, the elements of enforcement is very important. And also of making and ensuring that the rakyat ultimately understands the rationale behind it. So it's worth remembering that when Dr. Zul initially introduced the no smoking rules at eateries, he received enormous criticisms from, you know, the media and even members of his own coalition. But the rakyat actually responded positively because it was quite well accepted that it was done for a very good reason, which was namely to reduce exposure to secondhand smoke. And in many ways, what we're trying to do now is a continuation of that work that he has done. But it also, I suppose his experience is also a reminder to us that we need to do things in a very, I suppose, transparent manner and in a way that engages society at a far greater level.
And linking this issue to the COVID-19 situation, is there any evidence that heavy smokers are more susceptible to catching it and that they could suffer more serious symptoms?
Unfortunately, it does seem so. In fact, there was a Malaysian study that was published just last month, I think. Yeah, just last month in the International Journal of Infectious Diseases. And they had showed that patients with COVID-19 who were smokers has significantly higher rates of complications. Now, these are complications like dialysis, you know, renal damage, acute liver injury, and something called ARDS or acute respiratory distress syndrome, which is basically a situation where your lungs become so inflamed that you can't absorb oxygen and therefore you end up needing extra support like a ventilator to keep you alive. And this is a study that was done in Malaysia. So, you know, it's very close to home. It's something that gives us a lot of information as to what's happening on the ground in hospitals in Malaysia. So, yes, unfortunately, there is evidence to suggest that, you know, smokers do more badly when it comes to COVID-19.
Thank you for your time. That was Dr. Helmi Hajah Maidin, consultant, respiratory physician and newly appointed technical advisor to the Ministry of Health on the tobacco and smoking legislation. Now, I'm happy for this because I think the Act has not been revised in a few years. So it's good to actually update it. And yeah, maybe the ban might work. Of course, there's question marks about enforcement.
Absolutely. I don't think any country has successfully imposed a ban apart from Bhutan. They're one country out of the nearly 200 in the world when it comes to smoking that has actually imposed a smoking ban. New Zealand, as mentioned, is looking for this generational endgame play as well. But whether we'll be able to, whether the two countries like us and them will be able to actually successfully impose this is a big question. Do note that our smoking rate is 21% compared to New Zealand's smoking rate of about 13%. So there are differences there in terms of how large the smoking base is when it comes to ending this habit permanently.
Yeah, but of course, the ban is only going to be enforced for people below a certain age at this current moment. If you're currently a smoker and you're an adult, you can continue. Although, admittedly, it's not the best thing for your health.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.